is Northfield Outdoors, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. From hunting to hiking, camping to cooking, mushroom hunting to motorcycling, and so much more, your hosts, Dave Vesladol and Andy Beham, will enlighten, entertain, and inform you with a lively mix of guests and discussion on all things outdoors. And now your hosts, Dave and Andy.
Welcome to another edition of Northfield Outdoors on KYMN 95.1 The One and 1080 AM. Northfield Outdoors is proud to be sponsored by Professional Pride Realty. I'm Dave Vesladol, and as always, sitting alongside me is our co-host, Andy Beham.
Yeah. Hey, how are we doing today, Dave?
A little tired.
You were out. You had a good Easter, I'm assuming?
Yeah, we just caught a plane back from Missoula at 3 o'clock this morning and stuff, so... But we had a great time visiting the grandkids and sitting in some of the hot springs out there. That's a good way to spend Easter, sitting in a hot spring.
I think that we should get the station to do an entire show about hot springs. Send us out there. We can just relax for a good long weekend and tell everybody all about it. It'll be a great show.
You didn't get to go here last month?
Did I miss that memo?
Yeah, man.
Hey, well, more in theme with the show, and not as relaxing, is you also had another trip right before that.
Yeah, right before this, I had a chance to go snow goose hunting out in South Dakota, out by Redfield, South Dakota. It's off of 212. Just a little southwest of Aberdeen.
Oh, it's something I've always wanted to do. How was it?
It was a blast. Yeah. I mean, the weather wasn't the greatest, but to see the migration coming through, not only of the snow geese coming through, but the duck migration out there, you literally would see flocks of not only hundreds, but, we'd have 1,000 ducks flying overhead.
Well, I knew you were going to have some luck when I saw the weather radar of the snow goose migration moving towards you. It's amazing how it shows up on the Doppler.
It is. And one of the things I had not experienced before, when we were out there in the blind, we actually had what was called a snow goose tornado. Yeah. It's where a few flocks started to come in, they started to circle, and they were bringing other flocks in. And we were literally looking straight up in the middle of this, and we probably had a couple thousand snow geese circling overhead.
And none of them wanted to have the courage to come down and see you?
Yeah, they were all talking to each other. You go down. No, you go down. But we had some great hunting.
Good. You had some success?
Yes, we did.
Well, good.
And snow goose hunting is interesting because the rules are a little different. There's
it's kind of a free-for-all, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no limit on how many you can take. You can put shell extenders on your gun. I didn't because your shoulder would just get too short.
Yeah.
And just be wasting shells and stuff. But it was a little cold out there, but it was fun. I'd go back and do that again.
Nice. Well, maybe next year we'll just do a show with both of us out there.
There you go.
All right.
There you go.
We're just building up that expense account for the radio station. All right, we got a great show today.
Yeah, of course, it's getting to be that time of year where everybody's thinking turkey hunting. And of course, we have the premier Midwest turkey hunter, Joel Nelson, with us today. And I'm saying that very seriously. If I don't know anyone that knows more about turkey hunting than Joel Nelson. Just give you a little bit of Joel's background. Joel Nelson is a pro outdoorsman that does a great deal of work in the outdoor industry, including a number of different brand names and companies that we would all know. Joel also writes for Outdoor News. I've read some of your articles, Joe. In fact, I was reading Outdoor News on the airplane this morning. He also does a lot of fishing and hunting seminars and has his own media site called Joel Nelson Outdoors. And we'll plug this in on our
yeah, we'll have a link to it on our page.
Facebook. But welcome, Joel. So how's that for a build-up?
Wow, that was pretty lengthy. I appreciate all the accolades.
We're setting the bar high. You're going to have to deliver now.
I'll do my best. I believe it or not, on Friday I have to head out for an ice fishing gig. We've got a photo shoot up north. So my ice brain needs to be retired, and I need to enter the turkey part of my brain rather quickly because it's upon us. Right?
Where are you heading up north?
It's probably going to be Leech Lake area or even up to Bemidji. We're trying to scout some kind of late ice panfish bites, but they've got a lot of snow up there too, so it's going to be access dependent. I've got some buddies up there fishing in front of me, so that'll help a lot.
Oh, so they're picking out the spots.
That's
right.
Hopefully that's the plan. We'll see how how willing to relinquish information they really are.
Yeah, well, the snow that's heading our way here in a day, it'll be easy for you to keep your mind on the ice fishing.
Boy, yeah, we supposed to be another couple inches again here. Who knows when it's going to end, right?
Yeah.
I'm ready for spring, though.
I'm ready.
Yeah,
I'm
me
ready.
Too. Looking at turkey hunting sounds like a lot more fun.
Well, yeah.
Hey, Joel, why don't you give us just a little bit more about your background, other than what my intro
sure,
was
sure.
To you?
You know, my passion and interest for the outdoors is it's always been really strong, even since I was a kid. You know, I grew up fishing creek banks, the Little Cannon River, casting for chubs and whatnot, and eventually trout. And before you know it, I was headed to college in northern Wisconsin, and with natural resources as a big focus of what I did. And I ended up finding employment through the University of Minnesota after a master's degree there in GIS. So mapping, outdoors, natural resources, it's always just been a really strong theme regarding who I am and what I do. And in recent years, I've been able to kind of marry that side of who I am and what I do with the outdoors industry, with both hunting and fishing. So I've worked with a lot of companies, Rapala, Lund Boats, Northland Tackle on the fishing side of things, and on the hunting side of things, Double Bull Blinds, Game High. There are just a number of groups and people there that in that industry have really supported what I've done from the writing perspective, seminars, all that for years now. So it's been a neat two-part portion of who I am and what I do.
Well, I'm sure it's not as glamorous as it sounds. There's a lot of hard work that goes into it, but it sounds like pretty much the perfect career to a lot of our listeners.
I love it. It's definitely something where you have to wear a lot of hats to make ends meet in that side of things, which is why I'm always looking to do things both fun and work-related when it comes to the outdoors industry.
See, and that's why I do my outdoor work from the studio, because nobody knows if I can catch a fish or not.
Well, one thing I do know for sure, every time I see Joel, he usually has a smile on his face, so life must be pretty good.
Life is great. I'm very, very lucky to be doing what I'm doing.
Let's talk a little bit about your how you got interested in turkey hunting.
Sure.
What were some of your first memories about turkey hunting? Where did you shoot your first turkey?
Right, just outside of Cannon Falls, east side of town. Back in the day, and still, the dividing line for zones was Highway 52. So east of Highway 52, when I started turkey hunting almost 25 years ago or so, I was a youth, and I got dropped off at spots because I couldn't drive yet, and that was the only place you could get a turkey tag, because it was close to the same zone that was up against the Mississippi River,
where turkeys
kind of had their start from the southeast and spread northward. But I first saw them when I was deer hunting in the early 90s, again, a youth. And it really kind of piqued my interest. What are these things? What are they all about? Nobody did it. In fact, I remember knocking on farmer's doors, and they're like, there's a season for those things, you know? So yep. So it started out real slow, and I screwed up for the first 3 years. I did everything wrong. I mean, I did. I can count about 10 different ways for each of those seasons that I screwed something up, and I learned a lot in doing it the wrong way first.
Well, back then, there's no forgiveness for doing it the wrong way because the numbers were so much lower.
Yeah, it was a different story altogether. If you messed up, you kind of hosed yourself for the rest of the day, maybe the next couple days, and I was lucky that growing up in the area, I had a number of farms to hunt, and nobody hunted them back then. So, yeah, I'd literally just have to completely relocate, find new birds.
And you didn't have a cell phone to call mom and dad to give you a ride to the new location.
And luckily enough, I think I was probably about 13, 14 years old. Before you know it, I had my farmer's permit, which allowed me to farm drive over to turkey hunt, however that works.
Close enough to the farm, you could always say you're just heading back from something.
Exactly. Well,
like we used to always do, you used to always have to have, I don't know, like a part of a hitch or something.
Bale of hay in the back or something.
My dad was sending me to town.
There you go. There you go.
All the kids with farm permits, you'd think these farms would be way more efficient than they are.
So as many times as I screwed it up, eventually I did have this watershed moment where everything came together. It was a beautiful morning. The cardinals were just booming. I had gobblers below me in this draw that were just tearing it up and going nuts. And eventually one of them just took the biggest, longest sachet up this hillside, 150 yards, full strut the whole way, gobbling his brains out in range. I shot. That was the first time I'd ever shot at a turkey. The bird went down hard. Everything came together. I put him over my shoulder and I walked out of the woods thinking, I don't even know what just happened. This is probably the most unbelievable outdoors experience I've ever been a part of. And from that day forward, it's been an infection, a sickness of the grandest kind. It's something I love to do.
Yeah, getting your very first turkey.
The way you tell the story, I'm even picturing it with like a, you know, orange glow behind there you was. As you're coming out of the woods.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like that. And that's how it played out in my mind. And that's really how it went down. Those idyllic kind of moments are what we all live for. And the fact that these birds talk back to you and it's interactive, it's a completely different hunt. It's totally different than anything.
And I don't know about you, but I was calling everybody I knew and, of course, boring the heck out of them because I'd be telling the story. And you knew they were just kind of, God.
Was it because you finally learned enough patience not to overcall the bird? Then now you had to overcall the friends.
Yes, that's exactly what happened and stuff.
Well, you know, a big part of turkey hunting is the National Wild Turkey Federation. And I know that you do a lot of work with them and for them. So a big part of what we want to do with this show is talk about who they are, what they do, why they're important. So let's kind of dive into that. I'm going to let Dave introduce the 22nd annual banquet that just happened because, well, he was there and I wasn't.
Folks, if you ever get a chance, go to the Cannon Falls banquet for the National Wild Turkey Federation. And Joel is the MC, the host of this, but you know, I go to a lot of Pheasant Forever, Ducks Unlimited banquets, but by far one of my favorites is your guys'. So I want to let's just start. What is the NWTF?
Well, the National Wild Turkey Federation was an organization founded in the early 1970s, and they started out with the goal of trying to spread turkey populations nationwide. And at the time, there weren't turkeys everywhere. In fact, there were not turkeys in very many places. Some of the deep woods and big mountainous areas of the deep south were traditionally there was always a stronghold, portions of Missouri, some of the Appalachian states. But the NWTF has helped to lead the greatest outdoors kind of wildlife reintroduction program in our nation's history. In that time, from 1973 onward, wild turkeys have just gone everywhere from coast to coast through trapping and reintroduction efforts and through the efforts of all kinds of grassroots groups like our own in Cannon Falls that have helped raise money on a number of different levels to do all kinds of different habitat programs. So it's a great organization that to be a part of has made me really proud.
And does it work very closely with the difference? Well, let's just talk about Minnesota with the Minnesota DNR.
Yes.
And the reintroduction of that.
Absolutely. And the neat part about the NWTF is that it exists on a local, a state, and a federal level. There's this federal overarching approach where they help to secure funds for all of the states and turkeys overall in general. Then there's a state chapter, which takes care of everything from Minnesota-specific laws, working with the DNR, talking about habitat programs statewide. And then there's all these local grassroots parts of the organization that really employ the on-the-ground, you know, kind of boots-on-the-ground effort in each individual locale. So it's an all-encompassing approach at a lot of different levels that's really proved successful over time.
If I'm a non-hunter, why should I care about the NWTF?
That's a great question. And, you know, it's something that through our dollars, our funding that, again, exists on all those levels, we try to raise funds to benefit habitat. Habitat First is a real strong part of the National Wild Turkey Federation. And that habitat is obviously benefiting lots of game species, deer, obviously the turkeys we're talking about, grouse, all those things. But it's a lot of non-game species really benefit. Songbirds, you've got everything from, you know, woods and waters and some native vegetation types and fire regimes. And there's a lot of benefit there.
You know, you mentioned habitat.
Yeah.
And we had done a show last year about the reintroduction, or not reintroduction, but trying to save the bluebirds.
Yeah.
And one of the things they brought up quite a bit was the importance of habitat.
Yeah.
You hear that from Pheasant Forever, from Ducks Unlimited. I hear it.
It's,
and the money that you guys raise for habitat, to your point, really seems to help other wildlife.
And especially from the state and federal level, we're talking about everything from prescribed prairie burns to acquisition of new habitat, making sure that they set aside things to protect from development, to protect from urbanization in areas where it's most sensitive. So we're talking about efforts on a grand scale that are really habitat beneficial.
And Minnesota should have wild turkeys in them.
Oh, yeah. Minnesota, turkeys were extirpated from Minnesota in the 1900s, basically taken out of play by overhunting and loss of habitat, a lot of trees being cut. And, we've had them reestablished since the 1980s here, and they've been huntable populations. And hunters have really helped to establish them through license sales, through working with the NWTF. It's hunters that have brought back the wild turkey in Minnesota, make no mistake about it.
Well, I know Dave and I were able to see it firsthand when we were out for the Governor's Pheasant Opener in Marshall. And we went to the land dedication for the WMA. Was it the... I'm forgetting about the name now. Oh. It was the artist that did all the pheasant prints. Mager? Okay. Anyway, now that I've rambled on.
No,
but there was just great strip of land that was dedicated through funds from Pheasants Forever and the NWTF.
Yes.
And there was an area set aside for a reintroduction of turkeys there with buckthorn and different things that they need to really thrive and build the population around there. So it's kind of cool to walk through there and see firsthand this money that, most of us donate at the banquets and don't win anything back. But it was cool to see what it's going towards and walk through and see it being put to use and what it really is for.
Well, just listening before the speaker started to talk, listening to all the wildlife, all the songbirds out there. This is habitat. And, I love turkeys, but it's also nice to have some of the other.
Well, absolutely. And there's a big focus on private landowners and helping them manage their own property, seed programs to help establish, not just turkeys in an area, but all kinds of things that would, thrive on corn seed and wildlife planting. So there's really a broad appeal here, and that's one of the reasons I'm part of it.
Let's talk a little bit about the local chapter then, the Sunrise Gobblers. Explain when did the chapter get started and why did it get started and what are, we'll get into some of the other things they do, but just a little bit of the background of that.
I wasn't around for the very beginning of our chapter, but the story plays the same way in small towns throughout America. As turkeys, gain popularity in an area, the people that hunt them, the people that like seeing them get more enthusiastic about, making sure during hard winters, similar to the one we're having right now, that they do well over the winter. And the Cannon Falls chapter has been around, like you said earlier, 22nd annual Hunting Heritage Banquet. We've been around for 22 years trying to maintain habitat and do good things in our area.
Looks like you've got several dedicated people in this chapter.
Absolutely. It's a lot like any organization. A lot of times it's just a couple people doing a lot of the heavy lifting. And, we have over time really become a well-oiled machine. We've done it for a lot of years and we're really passionate about it. We feel it's very important and we're happy to do it.
Well, we're going to go ahead and take a short break and hear from our sponsor.
Professional Pride Realty is a proud sponsor of Northfield Outdoors on 95 The One. Let the staff and realtors at Professional Pride help you make coming indoors from the outdoors a welcoming experience in the home that's right for you. The realtors at Professional Pride are local and know the Northfield market, whether it's buying your first home, upgrading from your current home, or purchasing your own slice of the outdoors. Let Professional Pride help you every step of the way. To learn more, check them out on Facebook or at ProfessionalPrideRealty.com. Keep enjoying the outdoors and let Professional Pride worry about your indoors.
Welcome back. We're talking to Joe Nelson, who is a pro outdoorsman and who I think is the premier turkey hunter in the Midwest. At least I know in talking to him in the past, he knows a lot about turkey hunting. And so that's what we're talking about today. But we actually are trying to spend a little time more about the local Sunrise Gobbler chapter here, which Joel is part of. And again, you're listening to us on KYMN 95.1 The One and 1080 AM. Joel, let's. You just recently had your local fundraising banquet. Describe the banquet a little bit, and what's the purpose behind the banquet?
Sure, sure. It's an interesting event. It's held once annually, and every spring, every March, we get together, the Cannon Golf Club, and about 5 o'clock, people start pouring in, and there's all kinds of games and activities to play around the walls, all of them. Enter them for chances to win any number of prizes, really cool outdoors prizes, anything from prints to potentially a new shotgun to gear, clothing, knives, all kinds of really cool stuff. If you enjoy the outdoors at all, you don't need to be a turkey hunter to go to this event. We have a wine pull and things for everything from jewelry and things that my wife has always really liked to see, too. So there's really broad appeal here, and it's a fun night getting together.
I like how you make all the games all the different raffles interesting. It's not just buying a raffle ticket.
Right.
You usually have a game at different ones.
There's usually a game associated with it because at the end of the night, it's an experience and we want to have fun with it and it's more fun for us. And we like that part of it, seeing other people having fun.
Well, it's more fun for those of us that don't win everything to at least have fun. It's not losing money. It's donating money to a great cause. But you feel better about that donation if you had fun along the way.
But Andy, isn't it fun going with someone who wins something?
Yeah, it's great carrying your stuff up, Dave. It's wonderful.
Yeah, don't go to our banquet, but not with Dave. Otherwise, you just have to carry all of his stuff that he wins to the car. He's been a lucky dog.
I felt so bad with these people sitting right next to me at the table. They were struggling.
Well, you don't need to feel bad because it's a really common theme that we see. Those people that support us in a larger manner, to them who it's really important to donate and try and spend money at these raffles, they're typically the ones that, what you put in, you get back.
Yeah. And we do tease Dave that he always wins, but at the same time, I think he's buying more tickets than the average person also.
Yes. Right. That's usually the case.
I love organizations like this. Because you actually feel like you're seeing your money being used for.
Oh, definitely.
More so than maybe taxes or.
So, Joel, outside of the banquet every spring, what are some other ways that people that want to get involved and donate some money to the organization? What other events do you have or other ways of raising money?
You know, typically we keep it very focused towards that spring event, mostly because it's just before turkey season. It's after, typically, in most winters, the heart of winter, unlike this winter a little bit. And we really have streamlined our events. In some chapters, they're active year-round, and that tends to be in areas with more population. They'll do anything from shoot trap in the summer to have another banquet in the fall. Mm. But our organization is a small-town organization, and we really try to rally around our one event, make it a great one. And people can be involved in many different ways throughout the year, just not typically in the terms of events.
Okay.
Where do some of the funds that you raise go to?
That's a great question. And it should be one of the things on the forefront of everybody's brain when they're donating to an organization like this. And like I said, there's a strong federal, state, and local presence here. Most of the money that you spend at our banquet stays local, and there's a couple different programs we really try to do because we consider ourselves a community function, a community organization. We start with a scholarship in which we give a $750 scholarship to a student pursuing a natural resources type background, someone who is a hunter, an angler, an outdoors person. And then we also donate turkeys to our local food shelf around Thanksgiving time to those less fortunate. We've been able to partner with Peterson Turkey Farm and Ferndale Market over in Cannon Falls to do a great job for us there. And then one of the most important things we do is a corn seed program. We get Roundup Ready corn seed and bean seed into the hands of those that show up and support us, local landowners that then put that in the ground. And research has shown that in tough years, in tough winters like we've been having right now, the difference in a turkey flock and, let me tell you, a whole bunch of other wildlife species, both game and non-game survival, is hinged upon those food plots. so often, as you see, you're driving down the road these days, the make it black tendency for a lot of the agriculture, there's nothing there for these animals to eat. When you leave something in the field for them to eat, it is the difference in a tough winter. Study after study up and down the Mississippi River Valley has shown through the 80s, 90s, and today that if they don't have that food source, they're not going to make it in a tough winter.
Who typically is getting the seed? Is it a farmer then that will use that to just leave that? Or is it people who own, I got 40 acres out here that I like to hunt on stuff?
It's,
or combination?
We don't care. As long as it gets in the ground, we're loving it. And it's been a great partnership because we'll see farmers that really don't have any interest in turkeys, but they like wildlife in general. They'll put some in the ground. Or we see people that come to the banquet and they give it to some farmers to plant. Or they put it near their deer stand. They might only plant an acre or a half acre. We have people that plant as much as 15 or 20 acres and leave it standing, which is a big investment in terms of you know, both getting it in the ground and making it come up and then spraying it off and then leaving it and tying up that amount of acreage. So the corn seed program has been a real way to help wildlife locally, and it's one of the best things we can do for both game and non-game species alike.
How long have you been giving this scholarship program? Is that
since I started in kind of the early mid-2000s, we've always done it. And that's something that's supported on a state and federal level as well. So another example of how, hey, we get a little bit of backup from the state guys and the federal guys. When we're doing something good, whether it be you know, a youth event at our banquet or whether we're doing the corn seed program, we get support through our federal and state partners there to do to make that money go even further.
You know, one thing I noticed at your banquet, there was a lot of kids there.
Yeah.
And they seemed to be really excited to be there and stuff. And it was nice to see they had some of their own drawings.
Absolutely.
And I think it's so important to get them involved in a hunting culture.
For sure. And, you know, yeah, like you said, we try and make sure that no kid is going to walk away from our event empty-handed. They're going to walk away with a turkey call. They're going to walk away with a hat, a knife, a flashlight, something neat that they can use back home. And no matter their age, it's 16 or under, we have exclusive drawings just for them. Nobody else qualifies. And there's anywhere from 15 to 20 youth that show up. 1 in 15 odds is pretty darn good when you're talking about some really nice prizes.
Well, it may not sound like a ton to you or I, but, and I know with my kids, when you go to something like that and you come home with something or you win something, it means the world to them.
Coolest thing
and,
ever.
And, I mean, the memories associated with a basic $10 call, the memories are priceless.
Yeah, and it goes from just something simple like that, a call or a flashlight, which is so cool to them, all the way up to something like a firearm. My son, who got a chance to deer hunt for the first time 2 years ago, actually won a shotgun that he used to deer hunt at that event. And his name was called. He looked like a deer in the headlights. Oh, he was running all over. He didn't even know what to do. He was just beside himself. So you get the full range, and even something small, all the way to something big. It's something they won't forget anytime soon.
You know, the other thing that I noticed there, and I was kind of walking around listening to conversations, you'd have adults talking about turkey hunting, and the kids, you know, they'd have one of their children there, so we're just kind of soaking it all in, you know, hearing the stories of you know, what happened 5 years ago.
That's how you build that hunting heritage. They see and they learn from watching, and when you help them along in that heritage and they see the stories, they want to be a part of that too.
Yes.
Naturally. Who wouldn't, right?
Dave and I were talking with our salesman Lance out here before coming in the studio. And this past weekend, there was the Sportsman's Club banquet. And then the next morning, they woke up and saw a turkey roosting right outside the bedroom window. And he showed us the next picture was 10 minutes later, his son out practicing with his bow because he's bow hunting turkeys this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, just a perfect weekend for getting them hooked.
a little bit of seed goes a long way there for growing them into that lifestyle. And it's something that was really fun to see.
Yeah.
Well, that's our future with hunting. If we don't get those kids and I was just listening to a program this morning talking about how the hunters are aging.
Yeah.
And we're starting to lose some of the youth getting involved.
And then who's out there protecting the habitat?
Yeah. Because I don't think anyone cares more for the environment than a hunter. I really don't.
Absolutely, yeah. Was it Ted Williams that said, you know, every hunter is an environmentalist?
Yes, yeah.
And there's a lot of truth to it, because absolutely, when you're out there enjoying all of the beauty out there, you're not just interested in the game you're pursuing. And there's nothing about that. You might not even see a deer or see a turkey, but just being out there in it is the real treat.
Yeah, that's definitely it. You're not spending all day in a blind because you just want to eat turkey.
Right.
Go to the grocery store.
Absolutely. Yep, well said, no doubt.
Well, just as I was talking about the goose hunting trip, just watching that spring migration coming through was just inspiring. I mean, it's amazing to watch something like that.
And no matter where I travel or where I've been or where I go to, people that are outdoors, people that have had those experiences and have seen those things, oh my gosh, you talk about broadening your horizons.
Yeah.
They've got some real life experiences to draw on.
Well, I know we're starting to get a little tight on time here, but just a couple more things about the NWTF. Do they get involved much politically, trying to influence farm bills?
Yeah, like, you know, the National Wild Turkey Federation is going to do anything and everything it can to help promote the outdoors, you know, kind of the outdoors heritage in which we're a part of as turkey hunters. And absolutely, it can be political. They try to work, obviously, both sides of the aisle, because, again, their gain is not by supporting a political entity or a political organization. Their gain is by furthering habitat, you know, making sure that shooting sports, whether it be clay target shooting or just practicing with a rifle, is something that's able to be done, you know, wherever we all live and wherever we can hunt turkeys. And so they get involved through other organizations as well. You mentioned, you know, the wildlife management area and partnering with Pheasants Forever. They've partnered with many groups, from Trout Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, Whitetails Unlimited, so many different good organizations all doing the same work. Why not?
They all have the same end game in mind here.
Doing the same thing.
It does seem like the organizations are starting to work more together. You know, if I go back to the 80s and 90s, it seems like each one of these organizations had their own agenda, but it does feel like there seems to be more cooperation.
Yeah, and I think they're able to get more done that way. What I would like to see is many of the environmental type organizations and the hook and bullet crowd kind of come together.
Yes.
And because, again, it's shared interests, and while they may not agree on every topic and every means of doing things, so often the goals are shared.
Yes.
Let's do good work together.
Well, I think the science is there more and more, where these, you know, protecting the land protects the water and vice versa.
So much. Absolutely.
How does one go about joining a local chapter?
So it's interesting. There's a lot of ways to take part. The easiest and probably, you know, most eye-opening way right off the start, if you have no exposure to this, you've never been a part of it, is just to show up to our banquet one year. It's always around St. Patrick's Day in March, and there's banquets everywhere. If you're way outside of the, you know, listening area, or if you're west or south, there's going to be a local banquet near you. We'd love to have you at ours. Again, it's right around St. Patrick's Day. You can find it on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/sunrisegobblers. Showing up to our banquet will really expose you to all the different kinds of things we do. And then from there, you might be a committee member. You might work with someone like myself who helps set up this banquet and helps get that corn seed out to people. So there's a lot of ways to participate, but I really think you go to your first banquet and see how it strikes you.
And what's going on in Joel Nelson's future here? What are some of the upcoming things that you're going to be involved in?
Oh, man.
I know you do a lot on the angling side.
Oh, yeah. I've got Shields University training that I'm going to be a part of over in Chamberlain. That's on the Missouri River. That's a great event. Shields actually has all of their associates from every store go to the Chamberlain area, and we get together, and every manufacturer for every company goes to them, and they do on the water training and testing and discussions and show them all of their products. So they're not just knowledgeable from a sales perspective, but from
they've actually used it.
They've used it. They've caught walleyes with it. They've if you know, they put it in the water. So that's coming up here in April.
So you'll be providing some of the training?
Absolutely. I'll be working out there with Lund and St. Croix Rods and a couple other companies to help show things off. And, you know,
no wonder this guy has a smile on his face. Just,
that's work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then coming up in May, it's the fishing opener. I'm sure I'll be doing a number of different, you know, usually it's a TV news organization or interviews or things regarding that. And a lot of it is just about talking about the opener, talking about fishing coming up.
Are you going to be attending the governor's opener?
You know, I haven't done that in past years. This year might be that year where I basically wait to hear from the people that I work with and some of the sponsor organizations. And if they need me there or anywhere, I head out and do it. As long as I have time to do it, it's a passion of mine. And then probably the thing, though, that I'm most looking forward to is the Wisconsin Youth Opener, where I'll take my youngest son, Mike, out for his first turkey hunt. He's been with me to take a turkey. With me being the gunner, but he's 10 now, and he'll be able to get after his very first bird in Wisconsin.
Oh, the pressure will be on Dad.
You're not kidding. You feel it.
Yes. Oh, no.
That's way more than letting yourself down here.
I know. You know, my oldest son, Isaac, been able to show him a lot of turkey hunting success over the past couple of years, but not always a success in terms of the event. And have sometimes we've hunted too hard. We've gotten our bird, but so I'm going to make sure that we take time to have fun and we get breakfast and we take it easy when we need to, because that's part of the experience too.
All right. Well, you know, it's been a great conversation about a great organization, and we will have Joel back on to talk the actual turkey hunting itself. But, you know, go out there and find your local chapter. Make sure that you're supporting this grassroots organization that keeps turkey hunting going for us and our children. And on that note, we'll switch over to a lighter note, because we do still have time for Dave's Interesting Facts, or Make Andy Look Stupid, as we like to call it.
Well, of course, today we're talking turkey hunting. We're going to be talking wild turkey facts. And I'm not sure, Andy, that we can allow Joel to participate in this.
He can answer after I fail.
But we're going to test some of Andy's skills, because I saw him on the internet here. Joel, he was printing off all kinds of facts about turkeys.
Research.
Here.
I like that.
I printed them for you. I didn't know we were recording two shows today.
Okay, let's talk about when turkeys will lay eggs. How long do the wild turkey eggs incubate?
Oh, that's about 2 months, Dave.
No, I would say you're absolutely wrong.
Weird. Joel?
So at one time I knew the exact, like, down to the day. I believe it's 14 days. I don't remember if I'm correct on that.
Well, according to my research, it takes about 28 days before they hatch.
Whoa, I was off by quite a bit there. You got me.
You weren't off by as much as I was.
Okay, this is an easy one. And you only have to have it within...
Stop saying it's an easy one. It just makes me look worse.
How many feathers does an adult turkey have
on
its body? And you don't need the exact count. You can be within...
17.
You can be within several hundred. So.
Okay, so not 17. 2,200 feathers.
No, I'm talking a whole turkey.
No, I thought you were talking the wing. 10,000.
No, not two turkeys.
5,000. 5,000 feathers, Dave.
Between 5,000 and 6,000 feathers.
Okay. And I've been there every year to pluck them all. Yeah. And it feels like hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
You know what I do? I take my turkey in and have it plucked for me.
There you go.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah, I love smoked turkey. So
it's great.
A lot of the local lockers will do that for
Very
me.
Nice.
Andy, did you know that by looking at turkey poop, you can tell the gender of the turkey, whether it's male or female?
Yes.
Okay, how do you tell?
No, that was a question. I got it right.
No.
You asked me a yes or no.
What does male turkey poop look like, and what does female turkey poop look like?
I have no idea. Coils.
I bet you Joel knows this one.
Yeah, male turkey poop usually has a little bit of a J hook too, a little bit J shaped, whereas females or hens, it's shorter, just smaller nuggets, and you never see the J.
Okay, Mr. Smarty Pants, we're going to go on to our next one. turkeys have been clocked to fly as fast as what? How fast have they been clocked to fly? And this one is a little surprising to me how fast that is.
37 miles an hour.
Nope. Higher.
It's more.
Yeah. It is. What do you got?
It's into the 50s, but wow. I would love to see. I've hunted in some mountainous terrain where birds have been roosted way over me. And a heavy bird that starts a few thousand feet in elevation above me and coasts downhill. Oh, my God. I've heard 55 miles an hour or 65. I've heard all kinds of things. I got to believe that thing's doing 100 miles an hour when I see it rip past me from a few thousand feet up.
Well, Captain Know-It-All over here nailed it right at 55 miles an hour.
There you go.
Folks, I told you he was the premier turkey hunter here in the Midwest. How about how fast can a turkey run? How fast have they been clocked at the top speed?
Ooh. 13 miles an hour.
No, let's look at it differently. If they were flying at 55, it's going to probably be only about half as fast. So that would be
27 and a half.
Well, let's go with 25.
Okay.
There you go. We're just about out of time. We'll make one last one here. When a hen is ready to make little turkeys, she'll lay about how many eggs?
Seven.
I'm
wrong.
Okay. Yeah, you're okay. Wrong. And this is the norm that they will be.
Yeah, so? I've seen clutches. I've found nests with as many as 18 and as few as, well, nests that haven't been raided, like a complete nest. I found them as few as 12.
They say that the average is like 12.
Yeah.
So, yep. And how long does it take them to do that?
To incubate? 28 days.
No, to lay to lay their clutch of eggs.
36 hours.
No.
Oh, wow, I'm wrong.
Oh, extremely.
Okay.
Julia.
Egg a day.
Captain Obvious over here has got it. Yes, one egg per day. Okay, we're not playing this with Joel anymore. This is no fun.
Now that I feel great about myself, once again, thanks for joining us. Don't forget, next week to turn into On Tap with Corey and Ira. Learn everything about beer in southern Minnesota. As always, the show will be archived on kymnradio.net and found under Northfield Outdoors. Thank you to Hayes for updating the Northfield Outdoors Facebook page and to Professional Pride Realty for sponsoring the show. Make sure and tune in for future shows with Joel Nelson where we talk about the actual turkey hunt itself. And as always, Dave,
until next time, get out there and enjoy the great outdoors. Thanks.
Thanks,
Joel.
Thanks, guys.
This has been Northfield Outdoors with Dave Vesladol and Andy Behem, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. Join Dave and Andy every other Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on 95 The One or streaming at kymnradio.net.